welcome back to your Hebrew Nation Morning Show, where Hebrews from all over the world gather to share and listen about the biblical roots of our faith. Sit back with your favorite morning brew and join the conversation. Lines are now open, so call 503-967-3001. 503-967-3001. Hebrew Nation, His Kingdom, His People, and your radio station.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show. You are on with the wise guys. And man, we got a good conversation coming up for you today. I'm so excited. Some good stuff going on. But man, Aaron Tuck, you know, I see these headlines and they just motivate me to know more. I mean,
well, here's one for you.
Oh, yeah?
It says, if you snore, you could be three times more likely to die of COVID, doctors warn.
I should have been dead already. At least that's what my wife would have told you.
Austrian lawmaker tests cola for COVID and claims positive results returned shows testing is worthless.
Okay, he tests cola?
Yeah, like Coca-Cola.
Really?
And it came up with a positive test
for COVID.
For COVID. Problem with it was he did the test wrong.
But the headline got.
But the headline says that the COVID testing is all wrong. It's all fake. I was like, well, you did the test wrong. It may still be, but you did the test wrong, and so. But that's what the headline is.
Monkeypox. Is it the new COVID? Is it the new virus to take over the world? Headlines. What do we do with headlines? You got some more?
You don't want me to tell you.
I might hear. Let's see here what we got here.
Headlights.
Come on,
you know,
computer.
It's kind of like headlights, you know? They're too bright. They come at you and you get blinded by them.
Yeah. Blinded by the light.
Blinded by the light.
Supertramp.
Opioid overdoses kill more people than... food?
Really? Food kills.
Well, that was a CNN headline, so you know it's true.
Well, it's like...
maybe they're preparing us for the food shortages. Food kills. Take an opioid instead.
Take an opioid instead. Here, we'll make it really easy to get fentanyl. You don't need your baby food. Just get your fentanyl.
Oh, my goodness, you guys. You know, I think we are, as wise guys, we are on a motivational talk for you this morning to stop looking at headlines and start reading the body of the script.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing to me how wonderful it is. I don't know about you guys, but I have this back porch and I have this reclining chair and it looks over this kind of pasture setting that has some chickens in it. And
I was going to ask about your chickens.
Yeah, and a big old rooster, and there's a slight breeze there, and the trees on the left-hand side, they're all cotton trees, and they just kind of...
They sway.
They just sing. Okay, and so in the afternoon, if I get a chance, I grab a book.
And chuck it at the rooster?
No!
Shut up!
I felt like that this morning. I was trying to find anything to throw at that rooster. He gets up at 4 a.m. and starts crowing. Oh, my word. So I'm up at 5. Anyways, if I get a chance, I go out to that back porch in an afternoon when the breeze is there and the sun is on, and pull out a book and just envelop yourself in the book. I mean, it's just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing better, I think, than just turning pages. I mean, feeling the page, looking at the page, reading it. I don't know about you guys, but I've tried reading books on internet. I don't know what you call them. What do you call them?
The e-books, the Kindles. E-books. Yeah.
And I couldn't feel the page, so I lost interest, you know.
And they say that studies have shown –
Is this a headline?
I read this on the internet. That you actually do retain more with the holding the book because of the relationship of the turning of the page, the looking at the page, feeling it, you know, just that whole aspect of it, instead of just on a computer screen or a little tablet screen, whatever you're using it digitally, or listening to it through audio, that holding the book and reading it, because the extra stuff that you're doing, you actually learn more from the physical books.
Yeah. One thing you should, you could do, not, not I was wanting to say you should do, but you could do.
Thank you, Todd.
This is something that would be beneficial to everybody. Amen!
I know, right?
There are three ways to learn via reading. One is the actual reading itself. Second is hearing the reading. And the third is speaking the reading. And so there's, I mean, just reading a word, a series of words, isn't, I mean, that's okay, but there are three different ways you can learn from that. And one is hearing your own voice or hearing somebody else speak it, and then reading it and then hearing it, actually doing the speaking. And it's amazing how, it's like, how often do you read out loud to yourself?
I put myself to sleep when I do that.
It can be done. It can be done. But that's the whole principle, is that you read out loud when you read, because you hear and you learn much better when you hear the voice.
That kind of goes along with my – I had a format that I used with my middle schoolers. Want to know what it is? Say yes, yes.
Yeah,
oh, okay, so,
sure.
So it's called –
Can I get a yes?
Yeah. It's called SQ3R.
SQ3R.
Survey.
Square.
Yeah, survey, question, review, read, and recite. Okay? So we surveyed the book. So that means I open up my book and I glance through it.
Oh, it's not number three R, it's RRR.
Yeah, RRR, right?
So
I first survey the book. I look at the front of it, I look at the back of the book, I kind of page through it to see if there's pictures or it's mostly text, and look at the headlines that are in there. And I go, And then question means, I wonder what those things mean.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So if the book is about, some sort of historical event, I could ask myself, well, what event is it and how does it affect my life today? So survey question, then I read it, because now I'm looking for the questions. Then I recite it. Okay? Survey question, review, read, and recite. Or is it the other way around? Survey question.
It'd be really hard to review before you actually read it.
Yeah, so read, review, recite. Or maybe it's the other way around. Never mind.
But your system.
Yeah,
buddy.
But if I read it, okay, then I'm going to recite it. That means talk it back to a person. Mm-hmm. This is what I found out.
Right.
And then when I review it, I'm reviewing different highlights that I made in the book as I read it.
Yeah.
That way I start to retain it. So it worked really good for eighth graders, is what I'm saying.
You know, we used to do these seminars, and in that, one of the guys found this graphic of, you know, how we retain information. And they broke it down between, if I just stand up here and just tell it to you, you'll go home with about 3%. But if we have pictures with it, it gets more.
Yep.
If we have actions around it, we get. If you tell somebody about it, you get more. If you teach it, you know. So all of those different levels, you know, the more you are touching it, basically, the more you're going to retain it and learn it and
well, I know
make
there
it
are
your
people
own.
That are audio and they don't necessarily like reading, you know. But usually, even with my eighth graders there, I'd have them listen to an audio of it and read along or do something else. Mm-hmm. My wife is more audio. She likes to hear podcasts, okay? Mm-hmm. And there are many people who like to do it. But today I just want to focus in on a minute. What are the benefits of actually reading a book? And I think what I would like to see is people inspired to not only read another book, but actually read the Bible. That would be a good thing.
That would be a good one to start with, at least, yeah.
Okay.
Or if you need to, start with the Dick and Jane series.
Yeah, right.
You know, that might be where you're at. I don't know.
Any number of things. The concept is to hold on to.
Yeah, and not throw it away.
And it's like, if you struggle with reading for whatever reason, pick something easy. That's your motivator. You want to read the Bible. Sure enough, you want to read a book. You want to read a novel. You want, whatever, but find something easy that's easy for you to go through. It's quick. You do all that stuff. And that's where you retain your ability to read. And then you have more difficult books, and then you have the Bible, and all these different concepts.
So you're telling me that if I do that, my vocabulary might even increase?
I would say so, because I've learned that just from going to Catholic school, and how some of the nuns were very strict on English, the language and composition, and how you spoke. It's amazing. And the more you read, the more you retain, whether you're intending that way or not. You're reading more.
It just happens.
It just happens. And it's part of the breathing process that you will pick up. You're not aware of it per se. It's like, if you're listening to this, Dieter, I love you, brother. He's been the biggest example to me of how a person can change.
Yeah.
He was a hardcore man.
Yeah.
And he doesn't believe this very much himself, but he's smart.
Oh,
and
duh.
And his
yeah.
He uses his vocabulary has so increased over the years, and he's using stuff now that most people don't get, don't understand. And I look over at him and I look at Darren sometimes, and we just snicker, you know, and how he's grown.
Yeah.
And it's an amazing thing, and that's through reading.
Reading's amazing. Is this able to be? Did we do any research? Is there anyone that comes out and says that there's a benefits to reading?
Yeah, I found an article that kind of breaks it down, and some of the stuff that Tuck is saying here is on this list. Mm-hmm. And so it's not that that was Tuck's opinion. Well, it's other people's opinion too,
it's
because
been
proven. Yeah,
amazing.
I'm going to just kind of do this out of order here because. This one really jumped out at me, the number four on the list.
Mm-hmm.
Reading improves literacy.
What's literacy?
The ability to understand.
Basically what Tuck was kind of talking about right there. So, okay, so what we got here, it's a list of 10.
Yeah.
Reading exercises the brain.
Yeah, really well. It stimulates the brain.
Yeah.
In fact, we find out with kids, with little kids, reading to them from books really gets them going because it creates an imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas all they're doing is watching TV, your imagination brain cells go dead.
You turn into a president.
You're just absorbing.
You're just absorbing. Thinking. You're not thinking. All right, next one.
Reading is a form of entertainment, and they threw in free, but you know, you got to still buy the book. But you could go to the library for free and still get
sure.
That so
you know it's Ben Carson, the brain surgeon, who said his mama made him sit down every day when he came home, and he had to read. I think it was 2 hours every day, whether he liked it or not.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to get out of it, and she would just smack him up the
wall. Well, good for her.
And he became the world's best brain surgeon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What else you got?
Reading improves concentration and the ability to focus.
Squirrel.
I know, right?
For those of you that don't get that, that's Aaron's method of showing how we can be distracted.
Right.
And by there darts a squirrel across the street. So that's why Aaron is seeing that and saying, squirrel,
yeah,
pay
right.
attention.
Well, it makes sense to me because if I'm having to go chapter by chapter, each word builds on another word.
Yeah.
And each chapter usually builds on another chapter,
mm-hmm.
unless, of course, you're studying philosophy, and then it's circular. But,
yeah.
Weird. Okay, next one.
Then it could bring us back to the reading improves literacy. So reading improves sleep.
Oh, that's so right. You know, when I wanted to go to sleep before, I would read the Bible, okay? And then I would fall asleep reading the Bible. And I thought people would condemn me for that. You shouldn't fall asleep when you're reading the Bible. And I'm going...
It puts you at peace.
Why not? Why wouldn't I want to fall asleep in the Word?
Yeah.
What a great way to go to sleep.
The only problem is you got to wipe the drool off the pages all the time.
I mean, your last word is
inspirational.
Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
Reading improves general knowledge. So again, kind of where Tuck was referring to.
So rather than headlines, we get to go deep.
Right. Instead of just saying, oh, yep, COLA test positive for... coronavirus. No, read the article. Yeah. And he was a guy who was going after a point, and he learned all that and did find out that he was, yeah. Reading also in is motivational.
Why would that be?
For them, they put here, by reading books about protagonists who have overcome challenges, we are oftentimes encouraged to do the same.
I thought it'd be motivational, thinking that if I made it from beginning to end,
I could complete it. Yay!
The thing I'm most fascinated with books is that, especially when I read authors who have written a lot of books.
Mm-hmm.
One is 39 books, one is 70 books, one is 40 books. These are individual stories that these guys make an entire existence out of this one thought, this one idea.
Mm-hmm.
And that blows me away. These mm-hmm. guys are doing that once or twice a year, making a complete story to 200 to 400 pages long. And most of us have trouble reciting, speaking one's concrete idea, mm-hmm. let alone a whole new existence, a whole new reality, and they do this, and they sell it. I mean, most people can't do it just to explain to their buddy,
yeah.
you know, an idea that they had. These guys do it every single day.
Okay, so do I have a psychological problem? Because I actually like
yes.
to read, I actually like to read the end of the book first, and then I want to find out how they got to that conclusion. So then I read it from the start. So I start at the end. And then I go ahead and start reading it.
That's, you can do that. That's, you risk changing the absorption of data while you're reading the book because you know the end.
Yeah, I want to find out how they got to that answer.
Well, that's the thing, is that start reading from now on, or majority of the time, read it the proper way.
Tuck's telling me I'm not proper.
Is that what he just said?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Read it according to protocol. Beginning, middle, and end.
Protocol.
There's a process.
That. All right, go ahead, Aaron. What else you got?
Reading reduces stress.
Yeah, it's relaxing.
Yeah.
That's
puts you to sleep sometimes.
Course. Yeah.
Reading sets a positive example.
Ooh. Like I'm a reader.
Mm-hmm.
If you come over to my house, you can see all the books in my library, and then you know that I'm a reader. Oh, yeah. Okay, good.
You just have books.
I just have books. Yeah.
Don't read it.
I was waiting for that. Hey, next one.
And the last one on this list is reading teaches empathy.
Yeah. I wonder how they got to that one.
They say here, books allow us to experience realities outside of our lives. And it goes on. So you get to see other people's lives and go, oh, okay, I see how or why that person is that way, because now I see the full story.
Another perspective.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's also something else that I think that we need to go over here just for a minute, because if you're getting too awfully bored, don't, because this is a setup.
Read a book.
Yeah. Read a book. But I think there's books, authors of books, audiences will give an author of a book validity.
Yes.
So they automatically view them as an expert, even when they don't even have a degree to go with it. If they have written a book.
It's like Joe Biden has a book.
Yeah.
Perfect example.
You mean someone from his office wrote the book for him, right?
It says Joe Biden on it.
That's what ghost writers are for.
Hillary Clinton has a book.
So
what difference does it make now?
So let's just walk through that for a minute.
Yeah.
So rather than always just giving someone, either someone who's doing a podcast or is doing a radio show.
Speaking of, when are you writing your book?
I know, right? Or anyone who writes a book. How can we be careful not to give them full authority? I mean, how do we have to start viewing that?
Well, I think we have to be careful about just that automatic, oh, well, they're a big name. Mm-hmm. Instead of we should look at them and go, oh, I've heard about this person. Okay, let me look at it. Let me grab the book and do your little QR thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, look at and read the back cover and see, you know, who is this guy? Is it Joe Schmo off the street who just threw a bunch of words together? Or is it a guy who went through an experience, you know, through his life or whatever, had a tragedy, and it's telling a story about his life and how he got from, well, Mike Lindell wrote a book, you know, The Pillow Guy.
Yeah.
You know, so why are you going to read a book about a pillow guy? Well, it's because he had a really rough background in his life and how God saved his life and turned him around to be Mike Lindell, the pillow guy.
So those are like storybooks. I mean, but even like a person, let's just take Matt Walsh for a minute, who's been a real famous now podcaster. Mm-hmm. He wrote a book, but he doesn't have a college degree.
Really? I didn't know that.
But he talks like he's pretty educated. He, you know, has all these things. But, and I know a number of people that are like that. They have a vocabulary that's amazing. They have a viewpoint that's amazing. And they know how to talk about it. Like Tuck was saying, this is how they line it up.
Well, then in that case, would you test it out?
Right. So I think most people, I think, have, at least I did in the past, I used to view the author as the leading authority. So the author would come out and I go, you must be the authority because you wrote a book.
You wrote a book.
And then it was one of my professors when we started doing research and writing techniques on the master's work is he drove through to us home that a book is just one person's opinion.
Mm-hmm.
It's an opinion that someone gathers. And I didn't understand the concept till actually I started writing theses for the graduate work.
Mm-hmm.
And what that involves, so people,
and you realize that you weren't the expert when you're writing.
Exactly. Exactly. Because he would say, okay, I need so many books for you to reference.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so we're wondering, well, how do we do that? And he says, well, you get little gems from different books that you want to get, start writing them in cards, start compiling information, then put it together. And then I realized that when I did that, I was compiling information according to my viewpoint from the world.
Yeah.
So it's just my viewpoint.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with your viewpoint, but that's all it is.
That's all it is.
Yes.
And I think we need to remember that when we're reading books from scholars or even PhDs.
Yeah.
PhDs is a real narrow focus. They take one particular item and they're going to see if we can just narrowly bring it down. It's kind of interesting. Anyways, what we're going to do here in this next half hour when you come back, we have a few books that we want to promote to you from Hebrew Nation Radio. And we have three today that we're going to give to you when we come back from our break. And we want to convince you to the best of our ability to start reading.
Start reading again.
You know, because I think it's fabulous. Also today, we're going to be going over things like, what is a conviction? When you're convicted to do something, what causes you to be convicted?
That means you're put in jail.
Right. Right?
It can be.
Or are you feeling condemned and you're no longer moving forward?
Because you're put in jail.
Because you're put in jail. What's the difference between knowledge and wisdom? We're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about how not to be afraid through Leviticus 26. So that's one of our study portions this week in the Torah. And right now, too, I just got this note, and it's just disheartening to hear this. Most of you tune in to some of our great teachers and people that are on Hebrew Nation Radio. Dr. Deb is one of those people, and she's on every Wednesday morning. She has a co-host by the name of Marilyn, and Marilyn's husband just passed away. So I would encourage you to write a note to the Dr. Deb Morning Show. It's on Hebrew Nation Radio. It's on Wednesday mornings. And get through to her and write a note to Marilyn and tell her how much you appreciate her and the doctor there and give her your condolences. I'm not exactly sure why her husband passed away. But that's a happy note.
Shadow of death into the light. You're listening. listening to Hebrew Nation Radio, a division of Torah to the Nations.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show. You're on with the wise guys. And I hope you've been inspired to open up and start reading a book. Yeah, we gave you a lot of good reasons for doing so, especially in today's age. You know, I know there's a lot of headlines out there that have us all worried about a lot of stuff. You know, I get it. I think we all get it.
Like the second coming of coronavirus.
Yeah. I mean, there's food shortages. There's all those sorts of things. There's, you know, crazy people in charge. So take a moment, breathe, read a book, and see if you can get inspired again.
And even if it doesn't do anything else for you, at least it gives you an escape from all of the bad news out
right.
there. that alone might be worth it.
Yeah. I don't think we're saying put your heads in the sand.
No.
It's important for us to do that, but there is more to life.
Yeah. And, I mean, even there is a little bit to put their head in the sand. Give yourself a mental break at least, you know,
right.
I mean, you know, if you've been stuck at reading all of the bad headline news all the time, especially CNN, then, you know, you're going to be depressed.
Yeah.
You know, you need to give your brain a break.
Right.
And do something different.
Speaking of which, if you go to Hebrew Nation Radio, we have a marketplace at that site. So go to HebrewNationOnline.com, HebrewNationOnline.com. And when you go to Hebrew Nation, you're going to come up to our website, and you'll see the shows that are airing in the podcast. But at the very top, there's a marketplace. And at that marketplace, we have all kinds of books for your benefit. And though we've been promoting a few books here lately that I think deserve your respect and your attention, one of those books here at the beginning is we've been promoting some of the books written to us by Avi Ben Mordecai. He's a fantastic scholar. He has looked into areas of biblical study that would take most of us
a long time. Avi's a pretty sharp guy.
Well, it probably took him a long time too, but that's because he's really digging deep into it, and really understands, you know, the whole issue, and then kind of lays it out there for us in easy to understand, you know, thoughts.
Right. Yeah, he's had a big life. He's gone the Christianity route, the Judaism route and the Hebrew route. And
lived in Israel for a time.
Lived in Israel. He's done his rabbinical studies. But he keeps coming back to basics. And that's what I like about him. And he always says to us, stay the course, man.
Mm-hmm.
Stay the course. So, Tuck, what do you got?
Well, the book is called Galatians, which is his commentary about the first century Hebraic context of Torah. Torah-based commentary, and there's a little paragraph that blew me away. I'd read it before, but I'd forgotten it, obviously. And it words, if there are 1,000 prophets, all of them of the stature of Elijah and Elisha, giving a certain interpretation, and 1,001 rabbis giving the opposite interpretation, you shall incline after the majority. And the law is according to the 1,001 rabbis, not according to the 1,000 venerable prophets. God did not permit us to learn from the prophets, only from the rabbis who are men of logic and reason. This is by Rambam's Introduction to the Mishnah, which is an oral commentary. It's not a written word. It's not the truth just because of the truth, because it was written by Yahweh, by Moses. It's a man's interpretation, personal interpretation. And these 1,000 men, valid, learned, have wonderful ideas, are being countered by 1,001 other men, who, because there's one more of them, their word is given more authority.
Or because they're titled rabbi.
Yeah.
And Avi questions that.
Yes, he does. And that's one of his descriptors on the back of the book,
mm-hmm.
in looking at Galatians. And this book is commentary on Galatians is...
And it's an actual commentary, folks.
Yeah, it's almost 500 pages
yeah.
of piecemeal, verse by verse, of the book of Galatians. And it's a marvelous read. And it'll challenge you. It'll make you do your own personal research, whether that's actually going to other books and studying them that way, or just thinking about it,
mm-hmm.
reading a piece of scripture and then sitting down there for hours and wondering, what the heck did God just say to me?
Mm.
What is this?
What I love, why Ave was committed to writing this, is because the book of Galatians seems to be one of the New Testament books that people put almost all their basket into, all their yeah. eggs into the basket to say that the Old Testament is done away with, that it's no longer here, that the yeah. Torah is not relevant. But what Avi does on that, on those breakdowns, is he gives the Hebrew words, he gives the Hebrew contextual meanings, so he stays pretty much in line rather yeah. than just giving his opinion. He actually breaks it down to actual historical facts and or context and or words.
Yeah.
It's a valuable piece of literature. I keep it in my library.
Yeah.
I know Tuck does too. So what's the name of that again, Tuck?
It's called Galatians, a Torah-based commentary in first century Hebraic context.
Mm. And it is amazing.
It is amazing.
Not an overall easy read, but it is a great handbook. He has this not only in the big form, but he has it in a handbook form.
Right.
So you can actually pull it out of your pocket. If you're going to a Bible study and you guys are confused and you're going, well, I wonder what Galatians 3:4 means.
Right.
You know, if you can look it up. Right, look yep. it up. Pretty amazing.
You got to carry a magnifying glass because it's really tiny in the pocket for me.
Yeah, the pocket for me is tiny. What else you got there, Tuck, that Avi wrote for
us?
Well,
the other one is called Coming Home, the Genesis Creation Story of Hebraic Faith, Hope, and Love for Everyday Life. And it's been a while since I read this, and so I don't remember everything offhand. But it's coming home, just what that phrase references. You're coming home, you're coming to a place of security, you're coming home to a place of knowledge, to where you feel secure, you feel safe. And it's the the Genesis creation story. And most believers, if you take that just piecemeal by what it states, the Genesis, the beginning of the book,
mm-hmm.
creation, the beginning of life, story. You know, and it's like just that title gives me pause because it makes me look at everything at the point of view of God. And he begins with the creation, and it's a story about life.
I was always told when I was pastoring within the New Testament church that we're supposed to start everyone with the book of John, because the book of John is a love story and it's so easy to understand, and that therefore I should present the book of John to all newcomers.
So this is why you like to read the back of the book first, because you were trained to go to the end and see what the end of it is, so you'd know if you want to start at the beginning of the story.
Thank you. That's exactly true, because Ave takes it differently, and he says, in the beginning was the Word. Well, what was the Word? Genesis, Bereshit.
And also Yeshua.
Yes, so we don't think of Genesis as necessarily being a complete picture of who is Yahweh God, who is the Spirit, the Ruach HaKodesh, who is Jesus, Yeshua. Genesis actually points out who they are.
Yes.
Okay? And that's why Ave takes us back to the beginning, to the home chapter. So, in my mind, I couldn't even understand John to its fullest context.
Without the rest.
Without this understanding of Genesis. Genesis is the beginning.
See, because I, every time I have built a house, every time I start with the roof.
Yeah,
I start with the roof.
It's in a mood today, I can tell.
And then I take the walls and I push the walls up underneath the roof, and
And then you create the foundation for the roof and the walls.
Yeah.
Right.
That's pretty marvelous.
So what's the name of this book again?
This is Coming Home, the Genesis creation story of Hebraic faith, hope, and love for everyday life.
I was so inspired by this book. I was able to understand who I was in the Messiah by going over Bereshit Genesis, and Avi brings it to life.
So look that book up. Aaron, what do you got this morning?
I have one. It's two, but it's a series. It's a volume one and volume two. A Game Changing Revelation by Stephen J. Spikerman. It's one of the ones we actually advertise a lot on the mm-hmm. the show. And it's really fascinating because, you know, we always kind of talk about, who are we? Where do we come from?
Israel. Yeah.
Especially when we're talking in Hebrew context.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We're talking about in religious context and stuff, but even just, you know, what's our ancestry? Who are you? You know, are you Irish? Are you Scottish? Are you, I was going to say something else about the president.
Don't.
Not smart guy-ish. I don't know. Something like that. This whole series, the two of them, do that on the level of the countries themselves as well, because mm-hmm. the scriptures talk about countries as well,
mm-hmm.
not just the individuals, but, you know, the different races of people, if you will.
Yeah, we sometimes think that America, Britain isn't necessarily included in Bible or the context, but Stephen Spikerman shows us the opposite.
Yeah. He starts out in the introduction with this phrase. This is the first sentence. As Britain's empire faded, a new Anglo-Saxon star arose to the world scene. It is almost as if an unseen hand had transformed the baton of leadership and power from Great Britain to the United States of America.
Mm.
You know, so he starts out by setting the foundation of, you know, in history we know of the story, especially in America, we know the story of Great Britain was the world power.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that shifted to America eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And so we think about, well, why is there this? You know, why did God have his protection over Great Britain, which kind of seems there might have been? We definitely know that there was protection over the United States of America. What's the purpose of that? Is there something bigger going on behind all of that? And that's where he kind of gets into it.
Yes, I love it. I love there's something bigger coming behind all of this.
Yeah.
He shows the relationship between Israel, Great Britain, and America. And he does it with history. He does it with lining up all the tribes of Ephraim, okay, and showing where the tribes traveled to on the diasporas.
Mm-hmm.
He also shows the scriptural understanding of these big countries.
Yeah.
He puts it in prophetic terms. Do not miss it. What's the name of the books?
A Game-Changing Revelation, Volume 1 and Volume 2, The Hidden Ancestry of America and Great Britain by Stephen J. Spikerman.
Oh.
And they're on the marketplace. You can get them $20 a piece or the set for $30.
Yep. You got to look them up. Go to the marketplace on Hebrew Nation Radio. And now,
what do you got over there?
Oh, this is a big book.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, it
dwarfs your scriptures over there.
It's well over, let's see. Well, it's close to 600 pages.
And it's big in size.
It's big in size. It's a national bestseller. It's called A More Excellent Way, Be in Health by Dr. Henry W. Reich.
Oh, see, I was thinking it was going to be by Bill and Ted.
No.
A more excellent way, man.
A more excellent way, no. But it is pretty easy. A More Excellent Way, Be in Health by Dr. Henry W. Reich. It includes 150 testimonies, teachings, etc. And diseases, this is one of his quotes, diseases in our lives can be the result of a separation from Yahweh and his word, and even in specific areas of our lives. We're going to get into this in our Leviticus study, but I find this fascinating with what he dealt with. He's a doctor, pastor, physician, and I'll give you one of his little quotes here. Do you know how many times I've prayed for people with arthritis in the past?
No.
Question mark. None of them were healed, so I quit praying for them. It was a waste of my time. But one day God opened my heart. I was ministering in 1985 when five ladies came up to me. Each of them had arthritis. Two of the ladies had gnarly disfigurations. I said to them, you know, there's sometimes a responsibility to God for healing. Now grab that for a minute. Sometimes there's a responsibility to God for healing. I want to tell you that healing and things you receive from God to a degree are conditional to your obedience. Now notice what he says, to a degree are conditional to your obedience. I'm not into legalism. I am into grace. But I want to tell you that with freedom comes a degree of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
What he gets into here with this is that many times people will hold sin in their lives. One of the biggest one is unforgiveness. And they hold bitterness in their lives. And we know from Scripture that those things dries up the bones.
Right.
But a merry heart does your body good. Okay? It fills you up with joy. And we know from science that people that have held on to forgiveness, that are in depressive states, actually do terrible things to their body because the body reacts. We're full of living cells, and those living cells turn into negativity, and then we affect our bones, we affect those other things. And so Dr. Henry Wright takes you through this stuff and how they've been able to heal people. And even these ladies that had arthritis, when they learned to forgive and they gave away their bitterness, started coming forth in a new life.
Wow.
He goes through every sort of disease you can imagine in this book. That's why it's 600 some pages. He talks about spirit, soul, and body and how they work together and that we need to approach them together. He comes with great recommendations in the back from a number of doctors, dentists, psychiatrists, and psychologists. I'll talk about how this plays into people's lives. And he's a world-renowned speaker, and he talks about healing from a divine perspective, inside out.
So does it talk about presidential stupidity, that disease?
Well, that could be a disease put on us.
No, that could be. I was going to use a different phrase, but I thought, we're on the radio. I won't go there.
So look this one up on our website, A More Excellent Way, Be in Health, Dr. Henry Wright. That's Wright. And you'll be blessed. There's not very many of these left. So you got to hook into those. So
what's the cost on that one?
This one's a little bit more expensive. I think this is around $60 or so.
But I would imagine well worth it because of the content that's in there. I mean, I'm not familiar with that content, but from what you described, well, sounds like it for sure.
Well, so many people are being stressed out today. And I have too much stress, or they have panic attacks.
Yeah.
Or they have phobias. Panic attacks and phobias are certain areas in your life that you've not given over to Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't, you know, gone to the root. He also approaches this other thing. You know how us Americans think? We're always looking for...
Wait, we do?
Yeah, kind of.
How us Americans think?
Us Americans?
Us Americans.
Yeah, you like that verbiage?
Man.
You need to read some more. You need to get. You need some literacy.
I need literacy, man.
But the typical American likes to find things that cover the disease or corrals the disease or controls the disease.
They don't have to do any work.
Yeah, band-aids.
They don't get to the root of the disease. They want quick solutions.
Right.
My brother-in-law wanted to go into, he was a, what's that word I'm looking for?
I don't know.
They assist people in surgery. They're anesthesiologists.
Oh, yeah.
One of the best paying jobs in town. Anyways, he'd gotten hurt, had to quit doing that, and so he went into pain medication because he deals with a lot of pain himself. And he found out that there was a drug-related, you know, pushing thing from doctors. You're going to deal with pain. We're just going to give you more meds.
Yeah, right.
And he decided to do some research because he was tired of how many drugs he was taking, and he goes back to school, and he's going to open up a clinic to help people out with pain the natural way.
Oh, so he's got some CBD going on, and he's got some THC, and he's got
pot. And he addresses the mental side, things that people are holding on to, as well as natural ways to cure. Anyways, he found out that most people, when they came in, they would say, I need more drugs.
Yeah.
Because their family physician couldn't prescribe more drugs. Mm-hmm. But since he's a pain doctor, he could prescribe more drugs.
Right.
And he's going, I don't want that. I want to use no drugs.
Yeah. Okay? That's his approach.
Right.
Yeah.
His approach. Now, to address this other one, too, I find this fascinating because, as you know, Angie and I are into a lot of natural healing.
Mm-hmm.
But even when I read Dr. Wright's book and some of this other stuff, we have a tendency to put all of our belief systems in also natural healing,
mm-hmm.
thinking that that's going to solve it. But that's just a corral issue as well.
True. Okay? True. That would
so
be.
I'm thinking, well, if I use oils, that'll fix it. No, it's part of the solution, but it's not the solution.
Mm-hmm.
If I use CBD, that'll be it. Yeah. No, that's part of the solution, not the whole thing.
I mean, they really, these are still basically just Band-Aids.
Band-Aids. And this is what I love about this book is he gets deeper to the root. What is the cause of your disease that keeps on flaring up?
Yeah, I've not read the book, but I would imagine, because of other stuff I've read, that some of the causes of your disease or your malfunction in your body is personal stuff that you've done wrong.
Mm-hmm.
That have nothing to do with the disease in general.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as you doing something stupid in your life against God's will, you know, and so that comes to the point of us taking personal responsibility for my life and my part in it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and most people don't want anything to do with that.
Isn't it interesting, Tuck, you know, what's one of the statements that Yahweh makes to his people when they came out of Egypt? You shall no longer have the diseases of the Egyptians.
Yeah.
But he put a caveat with that, right? He says, follow my
rules, my commandments.
Right.
Keep my commandments.
Keep my commandments. And a lot of those had to do, there's this whole system of forgiving, mm-hmm. of laying your sins down on the altar, letting them be burnt up so he would no longer remember them.
Mm-hmm.
He has this excellent way. Yahweh had this way of helping us fight disease. I think it's amazing.
Consider this.
Yeah.
Most of us as believers, we know we have a limitless God. He's powerful, all powerful. And he said he would forget these things as far as the east is from the west.
Mm-hmm.
And part of me says, right on. And then I say, well, wait a minute. He's God. He can do anything, including remember all these stupid things I've ever done in my life.
Mm-hmm.
No. What did he say? He said he's going to forget these as far as the east is from the west. You keep bringing it back up.
Mm-hmm.
You keep reminding him of the sins that you did.
That's
when
condemnation.
You were 32 years old. Yeah. Whatever it's called, you keep bringing up the references to these sins. Forget them. Let them go. Get over yourself. And if he forgave you of them, of the sin, of the iniquity, let it be.
Yeah,
learn from that and do his will.
We're going to delve really deep into this here in the next half hour through Leviticus. And what's the difference between condemnation and conviction? That's what we're going to talk about in the next half hour. What's the difference between a conviction
and condemnation? And how does it affect you physically?
You know, we even have found out, science even says that 80% of all disease is in your brain.
Yep.
It's how you view life. It's what you've taken on.
Right.
It's, yeah.
So you're saying that the president has 80% of the diseases?
Could be.
We need to. Are you trying to make a point today?
No.
Yes. Hang on tight. We'll be right back.
listening, and welcome back to your Hebrew Nation Morning Show, where Hebrews from all over the world gather to share and listen about the biblical roots of our faith. Sit back with your favorite morning brew and join the conversation. Lines are now open, so call 503-967-3001. 503-967-3001. Hebrew Nation, His Kingdom, His People, and your radio station.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back to the Hebrew Nation Morning Show. You're on with the Wise Guys, and we've been talking about books and reading, and we just want to inspire you to go down that path. Also at Hebrew Nation Radio, if you go to HebrewNationOnline.com, you can go to the marketplace on our website and look up three authors and books we were promoting today. Tuck, what were yours?
By Avi Ben-Mordecai was the author, and the first book is Coming Home, the Genesis Creation Story, and the next one is a commentary on the book of Galatians, a Torah-based commentary in first century Hebraic context.
Awesome. And Aaron?
A Game-Changing Revelation, The Hidden Ancestry of America and Great Britain, Volume 1 and 2 by Stephen J. Spikerman.
Oh, look it up. And I was promoting A More Excellent Way Be in Health by Dr. Henry W. Wright. That's W-R-I-G-H-T. A More Excellent Way to Be in Health. We're going to explore a couple things here today. Speaking of reading, get your Bibles out. And we're going to go through some text with you in Leviticus. We're going to be looking at Leviticus 26. And at the beginning of this, and I don't know about you guys, when people think of the Old Testament God, Yahweh.
So boring.
Right?
And such a mean, horrible,
vicious
God. Just destroy everything as soon as you disagree with him. He was the initial canceller.
Except, I always come back to this, is that it never uses his name Jesus or Yeshua. In the Bible, in the Word. But Yeshua is referenced all over in the Tanakh.
It is.
And so that tells me, and Yeshua is the author and the finisher of our faith. So why would he do away with what he is?
I know, right? In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God.
With God. That's what John said.
That's what John said. So I think... Before we read this, though, there's two words I want us to come to an understanding of.
The end.
Yeah, right.
Oh, no.
He's really into the end. It's the first part of the book that he's
I am. Yeah. What's the difference between condemnation and conviction? So I'm going to ask Aaron and Tuck what you think it is. Is it
spelling? That's true.
You want to go with spelling? That's it?
What's the difference between
condemnation? What's the difference between condemnation and conviction?
Okay, for me, when I hear those words,
he smoothed out his mustache before he spoke.
Conviction is you're presented with an idea, and you then, if you're normal, you assess the idea and decide if it's true or not in your heart. And so if you decide that it's true, you become convicted about that idea. You became sure of that. A surety is transferred into your spirit, into your being, about the idea. Condemnation is a whole different other train of thought, because condemnation means I'm damning you, I'm condemning you for whatever belief that you have for this particular reason. And so it's a matter of conviction is you're convicted about an idea of its decency or of its negativity, what have you. Condemnation is I'm putting a curse on you because you have this idea.
Can we condemn ourselves?
Oh, we sure can. We've done that quite a bit, probably the most of us in our lives.
Yeah.
See, I think of it just a little differently.
Okay.
As I think they're both kind of the same thing. They're relatively the same tool, but used differently. I think they're both a motivation tool.
Mm.
One is restrictive and one is freeing.
Wow.
That's one thing, the way you can look at it also.
That's cool.
One is a noun and one is a verb.
Mm-hmm.
Condemnation is more verb-oriented, whereas conviction is more of a noun-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
you know, I always think of it this way, too, is I love both of your comments, because I think Yahweh God convicts us, and I think Satan condemns us.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I think there's a difference in the approach. And if we start reading Scripture from the viewpoint that God's trying to convict us, we might read the Old Testament a little differently than looking at it as condemnation. Let's look at the source. Condemnation is to censure, blame, criticize, or attack.
Okay.
Okay, that's condemnation. I'm going to censure you. I'm going to blame you. I'm going to criticize you. I'm going to attack you.
Which is all you know, pressing in on a person.
Yeah. And we can press in on ourselves, or we allow other people to press in on this.
Right.
Okay. A
conviction
is a belief, a confidence,
a principle, a faith. That's why it's more noun orientated, because it's what you stand on. I have a conviction.
It is a thing.
You know, which is really interesting when, you know, today, when we hear the word conviction, many times we think of convicting a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, say those words again, thinking about that context.
Well, it is a belief. It's your belief, confidence,
principle, or faith. So we have a principle that we abide by when someone is convicted.
We've set up these sets of laws, and you know, this is it. We've written them down. We've all agreed, okay, these are the sets of rules that we're going to live by. Oh, this guy over here has broken one of those laws. He's done something against one of those laws, so we take him to court. We sit him in front of judges and listen to the facts and come to an agreement that, yep.
Forms a conviction.
We form a conviction that, yes, he in fact did break this rule, this law.
A belief.
This, and so we have, what were those words again? Belief.
Belief. Confidence, principle, and faith
that, yep, the actions that this guy did goes against the rules that we've chosen.
Wow.
So that is a conviction. It's not just, it could take on a whole different context of what we've thought of conviction of a criminal.
I love the theological point of view that you're coming at from, because I think many times Yahweh does convict us.
Mm-hmm.
And but he still saves us,
yeah,
even if we've been convicted. But that convicted is that he wants us to move to the conviction that he is God.
Yeah.
Oh my word.
Let's look up the text.
Okay.
Okay. Because I think there's some things here.
There was a headliner that I loved. Okay, between knowledge and wisdom. And we're always encouraged to have knowledge of God, yes, or to have knowledge. It's yep. always knowledge that is the precursor to wisdom, according to the book of Proverbs, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
But I had to ask myself, knowledge of what? Is it head knowledge? Is it
knowledge of G.I. Joe figures?
Well, knowledge can be head knowledge.
Can be.
Knowledge is just, I mean, in and of itself, knowledge is just facts. It's straightforward facts, and that can include good things and it can include bad things. Wisdom, on the other hand, is what you do with the knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think of knowledge, too, is if I'm to know Yahweh God, that gives me knowledge of him. Who's his character? What's he like? How do I operate within that? Those are some things to actually think about. Ooh, I missed a call. Oh, my word. I'm so sorry. If you call again, do so, and I will
get you picked up.
I almost need a flashing light on the computer.
Yeah, I do. When that comes in. Oh, my goodness. I looked down at my Bible, and I quit looking at this thing. Way to go, Roland. And let's see if I can bring this back up so I can see accordingly. Sorry, as I'm talking to myself. Yeah, that's grid view. I don't know if I want the grid view. Anyways, let's look up Leviticus 26. Leviticus 26. And let's start with verse 3. And Tuck, you want to read that for us? And let's get that started.
Sure. How far you want me to read?
Let's go, because let's just go.
The Revelation.
Yeah, right?
Okay. I can do that.
Let's go to verse 6 right now. So let's do 3 to 6.
If you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, then I will give you rain in due season, and the land shall yield its increase, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit. And your threshing shall last to the time of vintage, and the vintage shall last to the sowing time, and you shall eat your bread to the full and dwell in your land safely. And I will give peace in your land, and you shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid. And I will rid vicious beasts out of the land, neither shall the sword go through your land.
Well, okay.
I find that interesting. Verse 6 is interesting. The context there is that I will rid vicious beasts out of the land. Then he says he will make sure the sword doesn't go through your land either. That's the vicious men.
At the beginning of this, I shall also grant peace in the land. There's a little statement that goes like this. It was really popular a few years back. No God, no peace. No God, no peace.
The first one is N-O. If there's no God at all, there is no peace. Mm-hmm. And we know that because human character is pretty chaotic.
Yeah. And then K-N-O-W.
K-N-O-W. If I know God, then I get to know peace.
Yeah.
And this is his promise here right at the beginning. If you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments so as to carry them out.
Many times we always think of this, you know, there's a movement a lot of times within certain churches, and that is we think that once we're saved, we're always saved. But does that give you a license to just sin drastically? It doesn't.
No.
Because then I'm going against the very nature of who God is. So if I'm sinning purposefully, then I'm stepping on the grace that he gave me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not a great way to go.
You're blaspheming the spirit of Yah.
Yeah, then I'm not going to know peace at all.
Yeah,
I mean, a good way to think about it is in a context of you give somebody a loan. Somebody comes to you, they ask for a loan, you give them a loan.
Mm-hmm.
And later you forgive that loan. And they just go around and they just are just taking that money and just spend it on everything.
Oh, my word. Didn't that hurt you?
What? I was being cut. Okay. Because it's not, they're not being respectful of the gift you then gave them in turning that from a loan to a gift. You know, and so that's the same way that it's a similar way, I'll say it that way, where Yahweh would be to us is we're going to forgive your sins, the results of your sins, because you're choosing, you know, the right path here.
Hmm.
And then going off and just doing whatever and just completely disregarding, like, hey, I've got a free ticket out of jail now.
Why do we always think that sin is life and the commandments are not? Why do we do that? What? Because like what you just said, we have this tendency to go, well, I'm going to go have fun.
Yeah.
Well, why don't we view Yah's commands and his way of living as fun? Why do we view it I think it's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, because I think it's one of those mental tricks that we've played on ourselves. Of we have, well, one, it does come from the scripture a little bit, because we think of the Ten Commandments: do not, thou shalt not, do not, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We think of them from the negative standpoint, and so that tricks our brain into it's all bad, negative stuff to restrict us, restrict our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so we think of it as a negative thing, and so, well, we can't have any fun because I can't go do what I want to do. Uh-huh. And so that starts playing on itself inside your head and bouncing around there, and that's where, you know, Hasatan has gotten in there and just talking in their ear and just going and 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 works our way down.
Isn't that weird? I mean, it's like I will hear kids say, well, I'm going to go have fun. I'm going to go get plastered.
Yeah.
Okay, so then they come home. They had a major headache. Vomiting over a toilet.
Yeah.
Okay? Don't want to get up the next morning and go to work. That was sounded like fun.
That was a lot of fun.
And then the other goes, well, I'm going to go have fun, so I'm going to go have sleep around. Well, then you get HIV or get other diseases.
Or you end up with a child and you have other responsibilities. Or monkeypox.
That sounded like fun.
Yeah.
God said his commands were life, mm-hmm. which means they fill us up. You ever think about, I used to do this, it was terrible, and then I caught myself when we were raising our kids, is that many times we would give if you eat all your vegetables, then you get ice cream.
You get ice cream.
Okay, so like ice cream's the good thing. And then, but rather than saying, you know, why don't we say, hey, let's just eat our vegetables and then we're going to go play.
If you eat all your ice cream, you can eat your vegetables. Wait, yeah, right. This is going to work, right?
What is wrong with us? Talks without words.
The concept is that vegetables are not sweet. They are not pleasurable. They are not, you know, rewarding. And whereas they are, they're not necessarily sweet per se.
Mm-hmm.
You can flavor them any way you want to. We're all individual in that regard. Some people like honey on veggies. I don't know how I would do that. But I'm more a salt person, salt and pepper person.
Yeah.
There you go. The whole concept of, taste buds and such is that we
pollute them.
We do things, we put negativity to a certain act. And so to force us through that, we promise a reward afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of, I can remember having many battles with my mother back when I was a kid, eating green beans.
No, could eat them.
And, you know, stuff like I never won one battle with her, even to the point of if we sat down for dinner at 5:30, I was there at 9:30, still eating my last bite of beans. And
don't you remember the poor kids in Africa? And I used to say, well, mail it to them.
She would not fall for any ploy like that. It was, I don't care about them. I care about you. You know, you're obeying my rules. This is my house. This is my rules. You will eat this meal.
Mm.
And it was a matter of process. She would wait me out. Even if I made it till 11 o'clock, she would be there.
Way to go.
You know? And so
let's see what God's rewards is and what kind of battle that we get to go into when we follow his commandments.
Yeah.
So not only is there peace he gives in verse 6, but read verse 7 now. And verse 8, Tuck.
And you shall chase your enemies, and they shall fall before you by the sword. And 5 of you shall chase 100, and 100 of you shall pursue 10,000. And your enemies shall fall before you by the sword.
Do you see any fear in this text so far?
No.
Well, yes, from the ones that are running away.
Yeah.
There's fear there.
But not for those who keep his commands.
Right. No.
Those who keep his commands, they get to have peace in the land, they get to have peace within themselves, and they're able to stand up against the evil that comes against them.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the evil will run from them.
In verse 8, it was real interesting. This would be a question that I would ask of Yeshua. And 5 of you shall chase 100. 5 to 100 is 20 to 1.
Whoa.
That's the ratio. 5 goes into 100 20 times. 100 to 10,000 is a matter of 100 to 1. I just find that interesting. Why the variance? Why the difference of, you know, and 5 of you shall chase 100, and 100 of you shall chase 10,000. So it shows you
the power of the bigger group.
Exactly. I mean, the more we band together, the greater we band together, the greater work we'll do.
That's astounding, Tucker. Yeah, you know, when I had to visualize that, because I love action movies, right? Yeah. And you always see the guy that's up against like 10 guys, and you're thinking, wow, that's amazing. He took out 10.
If there were 10 of them, he'd take out 50.
I know. But here in Scripture, you say 1 to 20 and 1 to 100?
No, it's 5 to 100, which is 1 to 20.
Okay.
And 100 to 10,000, which is
1 to 100.
1 to 100.
Yeah.
So
that's a lot.
That's a lot. That's a ratio of 5 times greater.
I'm feeling pretty muscular already, man. I don't know what you guys
I think I want to follow his commandments.
Yeah.
You know, because now let's look at verse 10. I mean 9 and 10 and 11. So read that.
For I will return to you and make you great and multiply you and establish my covenant with you. And you shall eat grain which has been stored and bring forth the old grain before the new. And I will set my tabernacle among you, and my soul shall not abhor you.
Wow, look at verse 12 also.
And I will walk among you and will be your God, and you shall be my people.
That's a lot of promises going along with his commandment.
Yeah.
I get to have peace. I don't have to be afraid of my enemies. I'm going to be fruitful. I'm going to be multiplying. I will only eat new things. That's
well,
cool.
That's not exactly what it says.
Well, I'll eat the old supply and clear out that because of the new.
And before the new.
Yeah.
So you will eat everything.
And then I'm going to make my dwelling among you. God's going to live with me.
Yep.
Walk among me. Well, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they're his commands. Interesting. And then he goes on and says, I am Yahweh who brought you out of the land of Egypt so that you should not be their slaves. And I broke the bars of your yoke and made you walk erect. Now, this one verse, I'm seeing this here in the book that I just read in called A More Excellent Way, Be in Health. And I'm having to deal here with this even myself, is that many of us will take on the burdens of the world, the burdens of bondage, fear, restlessness, anxiety, doubt, anger towards what's happening within our leadership. And as we get older, you'll see us to just start, you know, almost crippling ourselves.
Right.
Okay? Hunched over, bending over, and not living in the Word. We're not living in Him, giving up joy. And I saw this text, at least for myself, and it was like saying, okay, I'm letting this stuff get to me, okay? But I want my bars of yoke, I want them broken. My yoke needs to be broken.
Right.
So I can be made to walk erect again. Wow. I don't know about you guys, but I think this is really critical for us to understand we're not slaves to this world, that we actually work for a higher kingdom, a higher authority. You can call in and talk to us. I think I'm up and going. I'm watching my computer screen better here, and I'm sorry I missed the last call. 503-967-3001. It's 503-967-3001, and hopefully I'll be watching a little bit more carefully and catch your phone call on because we're going into Leviticus. What's the difference between conviction and condemnation? I don't know about you, but when I see this, I'm convicted to walk.
Yeah, definitely.
listening to Hebrew Nation Radio, a division of Torah to the Nations.
Glad to be with you guys. It's pretty cool. Got to stand up.
Got to stand up a little bit.
Amen.
Getting sitting down way too long.
That was me earlier. Well, into the last week, drove back from Palm Springs with my dad. They just sold a place down there and bringing stuff back up with a car. And
how was that drive? You do okay?
Yeah. We stayed the night in just north of Sacramento. So we went from Palm Desert, Palm Springs, all the way up to Sacramento, basically. Then we got in there, got up to Medford for lunch. And, you know, because in California, you pump your own gas.
And you pay more.
And you pay a lot more. Holy cow, that was amazing. You know, so we'd get out, we'd stretch around and stuff, and, you know, we'd stop for stuff here and there, but we hit Medford. We had lunch with my sister and her husband, and then we got back in the car, and we didn't get out until we got to Salem.
Oh my word!
And so we get out, and it had been five and a half hours. I don't remember exactly now. And we're like, oh, okay, stiff. Okay, get out slow. It was, you know, at the end of 2 days now, and so we've really gotten stiff. It was definitely a get out slow.
So do you have a new conviction?
Yeah, do it all at one shot.
Do you have a new belief?
Do it all at one shot.
Yeah, I used to do that as a kid.
I would have, but, you know, my dad's a little older than me. That's dad, you know, he's... and that would have wrecked him.
Oh yeah, right.
That would have wrecked him. I mean, it was bad enough just the 5 hours or whatever that we were in there.
Speaking of wrecking ourselves, we were in Leviticus 26, and Yahweh does warn us about disobeying His commands.
Was that reminded me because that's going to wreck you?
Yeah, it's going to wreck you. It's gonna mess you up. And if you read this stuff, I'm thinking, wow, I do not want to be messed up like this. And, you know, I know there's a number of different viewpoints on this, but I think the principles, remember in 2 Timothy, we are told that all Scripture is given for inspiration, for reproof, for correction, all those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And there are many scholars who believe that this portion of Leviticus is dealing specifically, well, Israel is in the land where these people came out and they're dealing with these things and he's setting them up for example. But there are many of us who look at this and we go, well, there's a principle here that we need to abide by. And that principle is God has a set of rules and he says they're life. So if I live in them, I like the concept of life. So let's read through this, and he starts in 15. If you reject my statutes, and if your soul abhors my ordinances, so as not to carry out all my commandments, and so break my covenant, that's heavy in and of itself, isn't it?
Yeah.
If you abhor me, basically. And you break my covenant. That's a marriage thing. That means we're married to you. And I'm going to break my covenant vows, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be the little whore in town. So he does this. I, in turn, will do this to you. Okay? I will appoint over you a sudden terror, consumption, and fever that shall waste away the eyes and cause the soul to pine away. Also, you shall sow your seeds uselessly, for your enemies shall eat it up. How do you like that first verse?
Not so nice.
Does that sound like disease? Does that sound like anxiety? I will appoint over you sudden terror, consumption, and fever that will waste away the eyes and cause the soul to pine away. I'll set my face against you so you shall be struck down before your enemies, and those who hate you shall rule over you. And you shall flee when no one's even pursuing you.
Where are you going? I'm running away. Nobody's chasing you. I don't care. I'm running.
Well, but this goes along. If I know God, and I know him personally, I know peace. But if I don't know God and I deny God, then I don't have any peace.
Yeah.
And that's what he's saying to us here roughly is, if you stay in my commandments, I give you these blessings. But if you turn your eyes away from them, you're going to have terror. You're going to have fever. You're going to waste away. You're going to even run when no one's even chasing you. You're going to have enemies that rule over you. All right. And also after these things, even if you do not obey me, then I will punish you seven times more for your sins. I got to break down your pride of power. I'll make your sky like iron and your earth like bronze. And your strength shall be spent uselessly, for your land shall not yield its produce, and the trees of the land shall not yield their fruit. If you act with hostility against me and are unwilling to obey me, I will increase the plague on you seven times according to your sins. So, sound like a nice God here?
That does not, when you focus on, you know, the punishment side of it.
So is he condemning us, or is he trying to convict us?
I would have to say he's trying to convict us to, you know, follow what is right, what he set up that is good, because it's not going to be pleasant when you go the other way.
When I first read it, I was thinking condemnation. But you're saying conviction. So why do you say conviction?
Because it's a promise. Like what you read, the
promises first?
It's a belief. It's the promise. It's the faith. This is, if you do this, this is what's coming.
This is almost like the court example that you gave us.
Yeah.
Okay, that if I disobey these laws, I'm murdering someone.
Mm-hmm. There's consequences of that.
I'm going to go to court. Yeah. I'm going to be convicted.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes people have a change of heart even when in prison.
Yep. Because they've been convicted.
Now, this goes on and on for a number of verses, okay? I'm not going to read all of them to you because I actually want to get to this other part of it. Let's go to verse 40. He gives a way out of this conviction.
Okay.
If they confess their iniquity and the iniquity of their forefathers in their unfaithfulness, which they committed against me. So he views us as breaking commandments as something that's against him.
Right.
Like it's personal. And also in their acting with hostility against me. I also was acting with hostility against them to bring them into the land of their enemies. Now, when I look at this, this is the diaspora that happens.
Mm-hmm.
This is the scattering of the tribes.
He's going to send them out to another land.
And that land's going to do something to them. Let's see what happens. Or if their uncircumcised heart becomes humbled so that they then can make amends for their iniquity, then I will remember my covenant with Jacob, and I remember also my covenant with Isaac and my covenant with Abraham as well, and I will remember the land. For the land shall be abandoned by them and shall make up for its Sabbaths while it's made desolate without them. See, this is why I think most scholars agree that this is mostly talking about the land of the promised land.
Okay.
So I'm going to knock you out of the land so the land can have some rest.
Did you notice in verse 42, the order?
Isn't that amazing?
Normally it's Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. This time it's Jacob,
Isaac, and Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
Reverse order.
Yeah.
So he's dealing with the 12 tribes that got dispersed.
Yeah.
For the land shall be abandoned with them and shall make up for its Sabbaths, while it made
it is made desolate without them. So the land is made desolate because his people aren't there. What happened to the land of Israel? It became desolate.
Right.
Okay. They, meanwhile, so be making amends for their iniquity. Well, they're out in the other lands, okay, because they rejected my ordinances and their soul abhorred my statute. Now look at this in 44. This is amazing. Yet, in spite of this, when they are in the land of their enemies, I will not reject them, nor will I also abhor them as to destroy them for breaking my covenant with them. For I have, I would not destroy them breaking my covenant with them. Remember, he's the one that made it.
Right.
For I am Yahweh. Okay, so this goes back to your thought. Is this why you're saying it's a conviction more than a condemnation? Because if it's condemnation, he would never come. He would never speak to them
again. There'd be no second chance.
Right.
So that's why, yeah, you're right on. It's a conviction. You're reaping the rewards that you chose to take.
Mm-hmm.
This is what's going to happen to you. I'm going to scatter you among the nations in order to draw you back to me.
Yeah.
Wow. So even if this is talking about tribes that maybe you and I don't belong to, can this principle still be applied today?
Absolutely.
Why?
Because it's his character.
Okay.
And the world is his, including all the land, always has been, always will be. And he's making covenant. He wants us to play by his rules. And if we do, he will honor that. He will honor us and give us benefits. That the definition of benefits is vastly different. In this particular case, I don't know what they would be, but it will be long life. It will be good things. It will be produce. It will be this. It will be that. It will be positive.
And see, when I think of this thing too, this is the reason for the cherry on the cake. This is the reason for the New Testament, because Paul takes the message to the Gentiles. Okay. And he says, you now belong to Israel. When you accept the Messiah, then you accept Israel. When I accept Israel, I accept these commands because they were given to him.
You're not Israel. You become Israel.
Yeah.
So that totally different thing.
Yes.
They're not ownership of Israel. They are part of Israel.
Yes.
They become part of them.
And that's that branch thing that we've always talked about. Yeah. Yeshua even mentioned
grafted
it.
In.
Grafted in.
Yeah.
Okay. And the prophets talked about this.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, here's Isaac, Jacob, and, you know, Abraham.
Yeah.
They're moving things through. There is this land. They are dispersed.
Yeah.
They, because of their sin, they come back to the land. And because of the death of the Messiah, because of his resurrection, his life, death, and resurrection, then we get to have covenant.
And nobody, because of their station in life, whether they're natural born or grafted in, is better than the other.
Yes,
because
there's neither Jew nor Gentile, exactly. Greek, etc. Those are Paul's words. That's the writings of Paul, not to take away the law, but to be a part of it.
Yeah,
to explain it thoroughly, completely.
Oh, this is good stuff.
Yeah.
Really good stuff, because I've always, wondered, how do we talk to our Christian brethren who's saying, well, it's done away with. The Old Testament's gone. Really?
Well, then we have to say, who is this? Who is Moses talking about here? Well, it certainly looks like Yeshua, Jesus.
Yeah.
Is it? Yeah, I guess I think you're right. Yeah. Okay. Well, why would Jesus do away with what he commanded?
He wouldn't.
He wouldn't.
It's part of him.
Yeah, that's who he is.
Yeah, we don't lie. He doesn't lie.
Yeah.
We don't steal. He doesn't steal.
There's no purpose to impress anybody.
Right.
He is what he is.
Well, see, I like going back to my analogy from early on the show of, where I was building the house starting with the roof. I really enjoy the house that doesn't have the bottom half of it. I mean, they're fantastic.
Yeah.
They don't stand up very well, do they?
They don't.
But they're fantastic. They're great. They're all about love.
I still remember our interview with Tad. Do you remember our interview with Tad who told us about foundations?
Yeah, we don't need them. I mean,
so cool.
No, it's just
You know, and a few weeks ago we had an interview with Dennis Graham. Do you remember his story?
Yeah.
That he became convicted. He became convicted that he had to put away certain things in his life, and Yahweh healed him. That to me is amazing. This was a guy who had been, had disease for 10 years. But he said he held on to the sin, okay? But then Yah met him. He spoke to him, and he was convicted.
Ask forgiveness. Notice what it says in this verse up here, okay? If they confess their iniquity.
Yeah.
And we all have that.
Yes, we do.
I need to confess that. My iniquity, it starts with ourselves, and then we can move forward. Many times we're pointing the finger at everyone else, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You need to. Well, wait, maybe you need to.
You're pointing your one finger out that three, right? Three of your fingers are pointing at you.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, that's why I point with an open hand, you see.
Verse 45 and 46, I will remember for them.
and them is?
Israel. Because he says, look, in spite of all this, this is in 44. When they are in the land of their enemies, I will not reject them, nor will I abhor them so as to destroy them, breaking my covenant with them, for I am Yahweh. But I will remember for them the covenant with their ancestors. He's doing the remembering, whom I brought out of the land of Egypt in the sight of the nations, that I might be their God. I am Yahweh.
Yeah.
These are the statutes and ordinances and law which the Lord himself established between himself and the sons of Israel
through Moses at Mount Sinai. Now, if that don't put an exclamation mark on it.
Right.
He's remembering the covenant. He's the one that made the statutes and ordinances. They were established between himself
and the sons of Israel. So are you a son of Israel?
Well, I don't know. Read the book from Stephen J. Spikerman.
I would say I am. That's awesome. Wow. I'm excited about this, folks. There's a number of good reasons to be inspired. And today we wanted to inspire you with a few books. Number one, if you have questions about Galatians, about the law being put away with, read Avi Ben Mordecai's commentary. If you think we're starting in the book of John, I would suggest for you to start in the book of Genesis. Again, you're going to be blessed by the foundation.
Yeah.
If you think there's no purpose for you in Britain or America, think again. Read Stephen Spikerman's prophetic words. If you think you just can't beat these diseases and you got too many drugs going into your system, think about forgiveness.
You might be American.
Yeah, you might be American. Read A More Excellent Way or Be in Health with Dr. Henry Wright. You're going to be blessed with that. Look at Leviticus 26 this week when you're studying the Torah section and ask yourself, am I being convicted or am I being condemned? Wow, this is good stuff.
Yeah.
What's going on in our world? Anything cool? Not much. Do you have any what happened this day scenario? We forgot to do that with you today.
Yeah. That's
our insight with Aaron.
Yeah.
What has happened? And what is today, anyways?
The 24th.
Yeah. No way.
May.
It's already May
24th. It's gone by so fast.
Well, we've been having all this cold weather in Oregon, and now the sun's all of a sudden out, and got to get those plants up and going.
Yeah.
Before the cold air was just killing them.
Yeah. The Brooklyn Bridge opened today.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Back when?
Where'd it go? 1883.
Wow.
The Brooklyn Bridge, 1883.
I don't want to go down that rabbit hole of squirrel, but there's a whole lot of people that seem to show the technology that happened with bridges like San Francisco bridges, our warships. Many of the warships still being used or have been used from the late 40s into the 50s. We had some major technology going on.
Yeah. Telegraph was invented in 1844.
Wow. Telegraph bridges.
Well, you guys are looking this up.
Oh, and get this. Yeah? The message that he sent, what hath God wrought?
Who did that?
That's what Samuel Morse, that's what he did when he was demonstrating the telegraph. That's the message that he sent.
What hath God wrought?
Yeah.
What does that mean in Old English, wrought?
Wrought, made. What he made.
What hath God made?
Yeah.
Okay, so...
And that was the message that he did out on the dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee.
Now, a lot of people thought that was from Satan, you know.
Well, yeah.
Well, people intimate negativity for most things that are new.
But, I mean, think about it.
But, you know, see, he was a visionary because he realized where this was going to go and that the dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee was going to go to AOL. Which brings us to Facebook, which is evil and from the devil.
Right.
Well, that's only because of a particular owner of Facebook.
I'm still wrapping my mind around this stuff that we could actually signal someone all the way across the world with
instantaneously
with something like that.
With ones and zeros.
How does that happen?
Make a code. And that's what they did.
But, I mean, that should verify to us that we live in a world.
It's mathematics.
Okay, but there's still more than mathematics. There's electricity of sort. There's things that travel.
But it's
how does math travel?
You love music, do you not?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Music is nothing but mathematics.
That I know. Yeah.
And it's and the internet is ones and zeros, yeah. Ons and offs. That's all it is, ons and offs.
How does it travel?
Electricity. Yeah. Or light.
Or light.
Depending on which technology, because there's, you know, the fiber optic is all light, but it's still ons and offs. Everything in computers, ons and offs.
Yeah. How many millions and billions of times do you on off?
Okay, so how does this relate to our discussion today when we're talking about conviction, condemnation, and also laws of the universe or Yahweh's laws?
Yes, he is. That's the message I receive every single day is how big he is, how vast he is, because of the system that we're in, because we cannot explain it.
If I keep his laws, and he says that they're life, and I can walk erect and upright by doing them, is that a form of electricity coming from his throne, maybe? How do you view it?
I was going to say that it's certain laws. I don't know of a better word. Certain laws that Yahweh has for us of how to live. When we don't live that way, the consequences are not so great. Same thing happens in the whole technology world, computer thing.
There's laws.
There's laws. They only work a certain way. You try to do something differently, it doesn't work right. So you have to follow the laws of to get the right result. And we just read in there, when we don't do the right things by Yahweh's laws, we get some really bad results.
That makes sense.
We get some really bad ons and offs.
Well, yeah, and currently we're living in a world that doesn't even want to say what a woman is, what mm-hmm. a man is.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to mess with the universal laws that Yahweh put in place.
Yeah.
He said, I made man and woman in my image.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so there's laws right there that even show us who he is by just the relationship that men and women have. And when we break that down, we're headed for a world of trouble, I think.
Yeah. We're trying to go into the computer of life and alter it, and it's not going to work. It's only going to end with bad result.
His light now shines, the darkness must flee from the